And welcome to the Rick House. Folks, my name is Cyrus Farmer, and I am your host. You are listening to and watching the Stomp the Tea podcast. We have so much to get into tonight. And let me give you an idea of what you can expect to hear discussed. We're going to be talking about the Tour Championship, the end of the FedEx Cup playoffs. We'll also be talking about not only those results, but we'll be talking about the implications for the Ryder Cup for both the USA and European sides. And with 1 week to go before the NFL season kicks off for 2025, we will be doing a preview of both conferences. And tonight we will start with the NFC. And then next week we will do the AFC. So that's what we have on store. That's what we have on tap. But first, folks, it is 9:15 on Thursday, August 28th. And about, 4 or 5 hours ago, the story of Micah Parsons being traded from the Dallas Cowboys to the Green Bay Packers broke. Micah was traded for 2 number 1 picks in 2026 and 2027, along with the services of, I think, Frank Clark, one of the two, who is a defensive lineman from Green Bay that Dallas hopes to use to stop the run more effectively with the departure of Micah Parsons. Folks, I have to tell you, this was a little bit of a surprise. I always thought that the Cowboys might trade Parsons, but the closer and closer we got to the season, I felt it was less and less likely, to be fair and honest. But this trade, I think, is probably going to help both teams in ways that we can't even predict. Look, Dallas's point of view was that we had 2 12-4 seasons with Micah Parsons and didn't get to the NFC Championship game. So we can do that without Micah Parsons. I don't know if you want to call this a rebuild or not, but definitely I think it takes some of the pressure off of the Cowboys for 2025. I think they are going nowhere, obviously. They're going to be able to move the ball, but can they stop anyone? That's the real question. I think the answer is probably no to that question. That being said, obviously, Micah Parsons helps Green Bay a great deal. Micah Parsons is the kind of player that can wreck a game. So if you're Green Bay, congratulations. You have what could be a definitive piece to get you over the top. Who knows? We will find out. But Green Bay is a better team today than they were 12 hours ago with Micah Parsons. Now, obviously, we're going to talk about this later, but Green Bay has been hit by the unhealthy bug for the last few seasons on both sides of the ball. Let's see if they can get over that. If they can, they are going to be a formidable team. And just so you know, folks, all the NFL picks that I made for the NFC, the National Football Conference, they were made last night prior to this trade. If you don't believe me, listen to my picks for the NFC West. So just know that everything you are about to hear, I'm being completely honest, was literally decided on and determined by me last night before Micah Parsons was traded. All right, so on with the show. Folks, I want to give my heartfelt congratulations to Tommy Fleetwood for winning the Tour Championship and, additionally, the FedEx Cup for 2025. Boy, look, that is a wonderful way to get your first win on the PGA Tour. Congratulations to him, Tommy. You did a great job. He persevered. And I have to say, for Tommy, it was really more of, I think, personally, he was battling himself more than he was battling the field. Why do I say that? Because Scheffler hits it out of bounds on Sunday on the first tee. Anybody who had a chance to catch Tommy Fleetwood, really, they didn't fire. The people who got closest to Tommy were all coming from behind, like way back. Like they weren't in the last two or three groups. So Tommy was able to actually find the fortitude after a couple of tough misses on the back nine. And I feel really happy for him. I'm really, really glad he won. It couldn't happen to a better person. I don't know Tommy personally, but I was really happy that he won. I've been rooting for Tommy since he and Tony Finau teed off on the last group in Shinnecock a few years ago at the U.S. Open. I think they both shot 80 or something like that. So good for him. Great job. I have to say, the Tour Championship was so much better this year without these strokes added little codicil, you know, that little addendum that they did for a few years. No one wants to go into a tournament plus 10, plus 8, you know, with 10 extra strokes, 10 under, 8 under, 6 under, 5 under. To me, that's not a way to determine a golf champion, a season-long champion. And thankfully, they got rid of that, which I think makes all the sense in the world. Now, basically, anyone who qualifies for the Tour Championship, the top 30 players of that season, they can all, any of them, if they win, they win both the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup. So I know for years, the FedEx group was trying to get away from, well, if you win the FedEx Tour Championship, doesn't necessarily mean you win the FedEx Cup because you can go back and forth or we have a point system, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, that's how you end up like LIV Golf. So don't do that. What they're doing now is much better because literally, it's the best 30 players of that season, all playing one tournament for all the marbles. If you made the Tour Championship, you have a chance to win it out all. And I think that's much more incentivizing for getting to the Tour Championship. There should be no added strokes or no bonus strokes. You know, you should be able to try to put it together for 1 week after a very, very long season and see if you can actually walk away with that prize. Because I personally think it makes the FedEx Cup finale much more enticing and better for the viewership, to be honest. Speaking of viewership, I do have to say, I watched a little bit of this fourth round of the Tour Championship to watch Tommy get over the finish line. And I have to say, if you haven't watched him in a while, and I haven't, watching Patrick Cantlay play golf, oh boy, is he slow. Oh my gosh, he is such a slow player. Very, very talented golfer. I will never sniff his ability to play golf. I'll be the first one to admit, obviously. But boy, does he take a long time to play. Oh my gosh, every single shot is very deliberate. Now, I'm not killing him for that. I'm just making a point. He is a very slow player, in my point of view. I had to think about it. And I don't know what I like watching least, I should say. I don't know which I like watching least. Patrick Cantlay play a round of golf, or looking at the Nike generated Caitlin Clark new logo, which to me was very uninspired. If I have to answer the question, it would be watching Patrick Cantlay play golf, but only by a nose. That Caitlin Clark logo is very pedestrian. I don't know what they were thinking when they came up with it. If you haven't seen the Caitlin Clark logo, the Nike logo for Caitlin Clark, look it up online. It is, you will be underwhelmed. I promise you, you'll be underwhelmed. Nothing to do with her, but the logo is very, very pedestrian. Anyway, all that being said, I have to also make another point. I think I've seen enough of Eastlake. I think I've seen enough of Eastlake's golf club. I don't know why the FedEx Championship is tied, the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup is so tied to Eastlake Golf Club. I mean, I understand it's the home of Bobby Jones. We all get that. Yes, there is history there, da, 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 da. But let's be fair. If you are going to decide a championship, a season-long championship, shouldn't you be playing on a course that actually has more demands of the competitors than Eastlake? I mean, look, to me, the Tour Championship, the finale of a long season, should be very comparable in style of play to the U.S. Open. They should be looking for a single-digit winner year in, year out, unless there is an anomaly. If not, shoot for even par. It's the last real test of a very long season. Make it a test. These are the best players of that season, 30 of them. Make it a test. Now, Gary Williams of PGA Tour Radio. You know Gary. He's been on the Golf Channel, and he's been around golf for decades. Very well-spoken guy. Insightful as well. He was saying on PGA Tour Radio that he thinks that not only the FedEx Cup, but the Tour Championship itself should start a rota, in quotes. A rota is basically a take on what the Open Championship does, the British Open, for their championship every year. There are 5, 8, 10, 14, whatever number of golf courses that they select to be in the rota. And those courses get alternated year in, year out, depending on how many there are. I don't think you need to go crazy for the FedEx Cup playoffs, but I do think you do need a rota for at least the last two legs of the FedEx Cup. I mean, look, I like the idea of kicking off FedEx Cup with the St. Jude's Classic. I mean, it's not an incredibly demanding golf course there in Memphis, but, you know, FedEx is headquartered in Memphis. They have a right as title sponsor to kick off the playoffs anywhere they want. And I happen to be a supporter and have donated to St. Jude's for years, so I think they're worthy cause. They do wonderful work. So if they want to start the FedEx Cup at the St. Jude's Classic, that's fine with me. But the BMW and the Tour Championship, now that we've gone from four legs to three legs of the FedEx Cup playoffs, the BMW and the Tour Championship should be in a rota. Do pick 4-5 courses for the BMW Championship. Gary Williams made the point that the BMW really has morphed into the BMW Championship, but it was really originally the Western Open, which has been played in the Chicagoland area for over 40 years on and off. I mean, my wife is from Chicago. So, you know, we have an affinity for Chicago and the Chicagoland area. So he was making the point that the people of Chicago, golf fans of Chicago, should never go more than 2 or 3 years without seeing the BMW, which is formerly the Western Open, being played back in the Chicagoland area. And I actually happen to agree with him on that point. So pick 4 or 5 courses. If you want to keep them in the Midwest, that's fine. If you want to spread them around, the BMW's been at Aronimi out here in Philadelphia. And it's been at other courses here and there. But I believe that literally you should have a rota of 3 or 4 courses, maybe 5, 6, whatever, where you have the BMW, leg 2, of the FedEx Cup playoffs being played. Now, as far as the Tour Championship is concerned, again, it should be a test. It should be a difficult course in my mind. And it should be set up as a difficult course. Get out into the country. If you want to make it 2, 5, 8, 10, 12 courses, set the number. I don't care what it is. But rotate the Tour Championship from different areas of the country. It's a great way to reward golf fans for them to be able to see the best players in any given season. The fact that it's always at Eastlake, to me, does nothing for me. And frankly, I don't think it does anything for the FedEx Cup finale. Eastlake, to me, is not like some signature course like TPC down for the Players' Championship, you know, which runs high and low as far as scores are concerned, depending on the weather or the time of year. Eastlake is always going to be kind of a shooter's gallery. You know, people are going to score well at Eastlake. These guys are too good. Find golf courses, classic courses, where you can play the Tour Championship on every year, even if you limit it to a rota of 8, 12, whatever. But rotate it year in, year out, every year, so that you can actually spread the season finale to more golf fans and they have more of an ability to see some of these great, great, great players at least once every 5, 6 years, 2 to 3 years, whatever. I really think the FedEx Cup should really look at that as a solution moving forward to a problem that I've identified, a problem they may not think is a problem. But I think we've kind of done our time at Eastlake. Let's move the game forward. Anyway, so all that being said, that kind of leads me to our next topic, the Ryder Cup. Folks, I want to give kudos to Keegan Bradley. He decided not to name himself among the captain's picks, and I'm going to give you the entire USA, Team USA lineup. These are the qualifiers. Scottie Scheffler, J.J. Spaun, Xander Schauffele, Russell Henley, Harris English, and Bryson DeChambeau. They were the automatic 6 qualifiers. Now, the captain's picks, you were allowed 6 of them, were Sam Burns, Patrick Cantlay, Ben Griffin, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, and Cameron Young. Again, first and foremost, kudos to Keegan Bradley for not picking himself. Look, the point has been made over the last day and a half that any other Ryder Cup captain would have selected Keegan Bradley to be on this year's Ryder Cup because of how well he's played. That may be true, but as captain of the 2025 U.S. team, I don't believe that Keegan literally should have picked himself at all. It was a non-starter for me. I mean, and to his credit, he said he had never even considered himself for the team until he won the Traveler, which is fair. You know, you reevaluate things because things change. But for Keegan to go into this year's Ryder Cup as a player captain, remember, as an American, the last American who participated in the Ryder Cup as a playing captain was Arnold Palmer in 1963. It is incredibly rare. It just doesn't happen in the Ryder Cup. Because why? The pressure is enormous, especially now, in the last 20 years or so. The pressure is enormous. And the Keegan Bradley, who has played very, very good golf over the last 6 months, 8 months, you pick the timeline. He's played well. I doubt, and I could be wrong, but I doubt that that is the Keegan Bradley as a player who would have shown up at the Ryder Cup simply because of his responsibilities as captain of the team. So kudos to Keegan for not picking himself. I think it was really, really tremendous. It wasn't a self-sacrifice, in my opinion. It wasn't some selfless act. It was him trying to do the best he can, improve his team's chances to win, because the pressure on this year's Ryder Cup team for the U.S. will be enormous. That crowd at Bethpage is going to be a nasty crowd, especially if the U.S. team gets off to a slow start. And he being Keegan Bradley, is going to need to do everything in his power to buck up his charges, his team members, and lead in a way that is going to require all of his focus, not splitting his focus between being captain and playing. So again, well done, Keegan Bradley, for not picking yourself. I know if they lose, people are going to say, well, he should have picked himself. He could have played better. I disagree. I don't think Keegan Bradley, and this is just my opinion, I don't think Keegan Bradley was going to play well enough while captaining the U.S. team to actually make it worth picking himself, because he just has too much to do. So, that being said, that's my opinion on that. Now, look, let's be fair. If you look at the captain's picks, again, they were Sam Burns, Patrick Cantlay, Ben Griffin, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, and Cameron Young. Obviously, there are a couple of big names in there. Who are the couple of big names? You know them. I know them. Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas. You could argue that they both play well. Thomas playing a little better than Morikawa throughout the course of the 2025 season. If you want to include the last two seasons, it's probably kind of a wash. But I will say this. If it were me, and again, I know the pressure is enormous on Keegan Bradley and all of his vice captains, I probably would have left Colin Morikawa and Justin Thomas off the team in favor of a couple of youngsters, Maverick McNealy and Andrew Novak. Why do I say that? I'll tell you why. Look, Thomas and Morikawa were over in Rome with that debacle that took place 2 years ago. I believe they were both on the team then. Sometimes you have to not only plan for the future by playing younger team members, and this team, I believe, has 4 or 5 rookies, so it's a young team anyway. So don't get me wrong. I understand that. But I just don't trust Colin Morikawa in a big spot with the way he's been playing lately. I don't trust his putting. I don't trust his ball striking. And he's a wonderful player. But I think he probably could have been skipped over as a captain's pick. Justin Thomas, I think he has a great attitude and he's all for the competition. But I don't like the level of his game right now. What am I saying? You're like, Cy, Justin Thomas made the tour championship. He was top seven, I think, this past weekend. What are you talking about? Well, I'm talking about the fact that I just don't believe that Justin Thomas is going to be the spark that we need playing-wise for the U.S. to win back the Ryder Cup. You can kill me for my opinion. That's fine. But I just don't believe he necessarily is going to be the added value to this team this year to get Team USA over the top. I hope I'm wrong about both. I really, really do. But if Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa are part of the losing effort at Bethpage in 2025, in a couple of weeks, it is going to be a disaster. It really is. And I think if you were Keegan Bradley, you probably could have rolled the dice with a couple of younger players and trusted that they were going to respond to being in the fire versus two veterans who have been in the fire and didn't necessarily respond 2 years ago. So there it is. I have to say, the European team, let's not forget this point. The European team, they are going to be locked and loaded. They will be really ready to play. Who are the qualifiers for the European team? They are Tommy Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Rasmus Højgaard, Robin McIntyre, Justin Rose, and one Rory McIlroy. Folks, those are the automatic qualifiers. And we have no idea who Luke Donald is going to pick as his captain picks, but I think it's probably going to be a very formidable European team. They are not going to be afraid of facing that crowd at Bethpage, and they're certainly not going to be afraid of facing Team USA, who they feel like, in some ways, they own in Ryder Cup competition. So it's not going to be easy. But I have to say this. You know, the whole, will Keegan pick himself as a playing captain, or will he not pick himself as a playing captain? I think that whole discussion for like the last month and a half really kind of lent some juice, personally, to the Ryder Cup. And I will be watching, actually, the Ryder Cup this year with bated breath. I think it's going to be a fantastic competition. And I'm really, for the first time in years, looking forward to watching the Ryder Cup as opposed to catching the Ryder Cup once it gets going. So there's that. You know, I was thinking, the Ryder Cup was last played in Rome. And again, we told you what a debacle that was with Team USA losing to the Europeans in 2023. But one of my favorite foods in the world, obviously, is pasta. And I was asking, a buddy asked me a question the other day. He said, Cyrus, if you had to pick one type of pasta over another, which would you choose? Noodles or a shake? Now, what do I mean when I say noodles? I mean linguine, angel hair, spaghetti, spaghettini, fettuccine, noodles, long pasta. What do I mean when I say shapes? I mean farfalla, rotini, orzo, you know, rigatoni, all of those, right? And I have to say, me personally, I prefer a noodle over a shape. And I love farfalla, which is basically bow tie pasta. And I love orzo because you can do so much with it. It's basically a short grain pasta that resembles rice, but it's actually pasta. It has the taste and texture of pasta. But for me, it is too difficult to control the texture of pasta shape versus noodles. So I almost always go with a noodle over a shape, whether it's angel hair, which I was my go-to for years and years and years, or linguine, which over the last 5 years has become my favorite pasta long form, my favorite pasta noodle. I will always go with the noodle over the shape, simply because I have a better chance of controlling texture of that pasta. So I thought I would throw that in. Now, let's get on to the NFC preview. Folks, 1 week from tonight, the NFL season for 2025 begins. And boy, oh boy, I got to tell you, I'm very excited about it. The Dallas Cowboys will be visiting the world champion Philadelphia Eagles at Lincoln Financial Field to kick off the season on a Thursday night game. Folks, I have to tell you, I think it's going to be a very exciting season. I think it's going to be a fascinating and intriguing season. So, with that, let's get into this preview of the NFC. Let's start with the NFC East. Folks, I have to say, the division, in my opinion, the NFC East, is going to be very, very competitive. I think it's probably the third most competitive division in all of football, right behind the North in both the AFC and the NFC. I think the NFC East is probably the third most competitive division. The Eagles, I am picking to win that division. Look, they're going to repeat as division champs for the first time in over 20 plus years. That Eagle roster is very well balanced. It is young. It is talented on both sides of the ball. Between Jalen Hurts, A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert, Lane Johnson, you know, Cam Jurgens, the rest of the line, you know who I'm talking about. I can't think of them right now. It is just a really, really, really talented team. Look on defense. I believe Jahad Campbell is going to be a difference maker right away. My man, Quinyon Mitchell, I think is probably going to be one of the top five cornerbacks in all of football. We all know what Cooper DeJean is capable of. I think he's going to transition well into safety. And when he's not playing safety, he's going to play the slot. Zach Bond, I think, is going to keep going from where, pick up where he left off from last year. I really, really like this Eagles roster. And to me, the best thing about the Eagles, I think they're going to be good for a long time. And I think the reason why is because not only are they have a great mix of veterans and youth, along with talent, which trumps all, they literally have been through this scenario before. Remember, when they played the Kansas City Chiefs and lost 3 years ago, what did they do? They lost their offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, their defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon. And all they did was start the season 10-1. I think it was 10-1 or 10-2 before collapsing and limping out of the playoffs against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the road, without A.J. Brown, by the way, among others. So I don't think they are going to allow that to happen this year. I think they're going to start well. I think they're going to finish well. They may start slow, but I think they'll win games. And that is the key with this Eagle team. They are battle-tested. They have a tough schedule, an incredibly tough schedule. But guess what? The teams they play have to play them as well. And the Eagles, without question, are one of the best teams in all of football. So their opponents have just as tough a schedule on the week they play the Eagles as the Eagles have throughout the entire season. So I think it balances out. I like Washington, the Commanders, to come in second in the division. I think they're going to be a wild card. What's not to like about that team? They finally got Terry McLaurin signed and in camp. He is ready to go. Same thing. Well, not the same thing, but, you know, who doesn't love Jaden Daniels? And, you know, I think Zach Ertz has one more season left in him. Luvu, Sanskrill, that defense is just good enough, I think, to get them where they need to be. Deebo Samuels is going to help everyone on that offense. I think Washington is for real. I don't think last year was a fluke. I think they are going to be a challenge to deal with from now until the foreseeable future. The Washington Commanders are going to be there year in, year out. And I think this year, they are going to be good enough to get a wild card again, but I don't think they're going to win the division. I will say this. Again, these picks were made last night by me before the Micah Parsons trade. But I'm picking the Giants to be third in the NFC East. Why? I think they're going to be better than a lot of us think, us being me included, than a lot of us think. I think that defense is going to be very, very good. I think their offense, they have weapons on offense. Malik Nabers, you know, Rondell, I forget the kid. I think he's from Florida. They have weapons on offense. And the defense is going to be very good. We'll see what they get out of Russell Wilson, but I would be shocked if they aren't playing Jackson Dart by the end of the break, by the middle of the season. I think they almost have to play Jackson Dart regardless of record because they believe Jackson Dart is going to be their future. Now, I don't know if the Giants are 8-2, are they going to take the team away from Russell Wilson and give it to Jackson Dart? Maybe. Maybe not. But I think they're going to play Jackson Dart this year, and I think it's going to happen before the end of the year because they are that impressed with him as their potential franchise, future franchise quarterback. So Giants are going to be a handful this year, folks. I mean, they are going to be a problem. They may not win a lot of games. When I say win a lot of games, I don't think they're going to be 3-14. I think they'll probably be closer to 8-9 than 3-14. But they're going to be a problem. I think the Giants are going to be competitive. This whole NFC East is going to be really, really competitive for the next few years, which leads me to the Dallas Cowboys, which I have coming up fourth in the division. Who knows what Dallas is going to be? We know they're going to move the ball. I believe in George Pickens, but is George Pickens a showstopper week in, week out? No. Is he going to have to live with CD getting the ball more than he gets the ball? Yes. Is that going to affect George Pickens' play? Probably. Who knows? And I'm still not that convinced that Dallas can run the ball that well. I think Miles Sanders is there, among others, running back by committee. I mean, Dallas, this was even before Micah left. I mean, can they stop the run? I don't believe so. And I don't think they're that good against the pass either. Stats may contradict me, but I just don't believe it. So I have Dallas fourth in the division. Now, moving on to the NFC North, which I'm going to tell you is probably the most unpredictable and most compelling division in all of football, with the possible exception of the AFC North. Boy, the North in both conferences is tremendous. Here are some of the questions that I had. Will Chicago make strides with their new head coach? Will Minnesota, what is Minnesota? And how steep will the learning curve be for J.J. McCarthy? Can Green Bay stay healthy enough to put it all together? And what will the Lions look like with new coordinators on both sides of the ball? Folks, again, these picks, you can choose to believe me or not, were made prior to the Micah Parsons trade. But I'm picking the Green Bay Packers to win the NFC North. Look, the Packers' big bugaboo, as far as I'm concerned, has been health. They have not been able to keep all their players, their key players, on the field when they need them most throughout the majority of the season. I think Matthew Golden is going to really help a lot with that receiving core, with Romeo Dobbs, Christian Watson, you know, et al. I think it's really going to contribute early and often. And I think Jordan Love, if he can stay healthy, obviously it's going to help guide that ship. That defense is going to be just good enough to get them where they need to be. That was without Micah Parsons. With Micah Parsons, that defense might be top three in the league. If Micah can stay healthy as well. The Green Bay Packers, they have everything you need in a championship team. And they have their youth is really an experienced youth by now. And they are going to be a handful for anyone who faces them. So, Green Bay winning the North in the NFC. Team number two, Detroit Lions. Folks, Lions have a wonderful roster, and they have some very, very talented players. But look, I think the runs they've had over the last couple of seasons has probably taken a little bit out of this team. And I think they'll be good enough to win a wild card spot. But I think their reign as division champions ends this season. Look, the Lions on both sides of the ball are going to be incredibly formidable. And additionally, if that defense stays healthy, a.k.a. Aiden Hutchinson and all, they're going to be able to play with anybody. The Lions don't have to apologize for anything at all. I'm just not sure how they're going to respond to the new coaching that they have on both sides of the ball as far as the coordinators, offensive and defensive. Now, it's going to be really hard for me to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going with the Chicago Bears as third in the NFC North. I mean, I personally do not believe in Caleb Williams. Have nothing against Caleb Williams. I just don't believe in him as the kind of quarterback who can lead his team to greater heights right now. He may still be a year away, in my opinion. But all that being said, in Ben Johnson's offense, that's got to help him some. It really, really does. Now, I'm not as big a fan of the weapons that Caleb has around him as some people are. But I do like the improvements that Chicago made with their offensive line. And I think Caleb Williams can't help but be better simply because of the improvements they made via free agency with the offensive line and also their coaching with Ben Johnson. Now, let me say this. The Vikings, they are bringing up the rear in the NFC North. In my opinion, for one reason. J.J. McCarthy, I don't know what he is. Is he going to be good? Is he going to be bad? Who knows? There are too many unknowns, as far as I'm concerned. You know, his ability, his actual ability, his availability. You know, is he going to get hurt? His fortitude. Can he play through adversity? So many unknowns with J.J. McCarthy. I have to pick the Vikings fourth, just looking at it objectively. Now, that roster for the Vikings on both sides of the ball is ready to win now. They have weapons galore and a wonderful defensive coordinator that can basically manufacture weapons out of ordinary players, Brian Flores. But that being said, there's too much I don't know about J.J. McCarthy. I think he's probably a year away. He has to get this first season under his belt before I can believe the Vikings are going to be a true contender, which is why I am picking the fourth in the NFC North. Moving on. In the South, I expect the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to continue to rule the roost. Todd Bowles, quiet as is kept, has carved out a very nice coaching career for himself. And I think Baker Mayfield has done the very same thing as quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, who would have thought that replacing Tom Brady could look so seamless? I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are going to be a very good team this year. I think they're going to be trouble. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they're going to win the NFC South again. And I think they're not going to be knocked off by a Washington Commanders team that kind of took them by surprise last postseason. I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers could go a long way in the playoffs. Obviously, their weapons on offense are tremendous, not to mention the Ohio State receiver that they picked in the draft. Their defense is always going to be formidable with Todd Bowles not only coaching the team, but also lending his expertise to that defense as well. Tampa Bay, they're a good team. They're going to be a very good team. And they're going to win the NFC South again. Second place, I'm going to say something I almost never say. I'm going to choose this year to believe in the Falcons. I'm picking the Atlanta Falcons as not only the second place team in the NFC South, but I'm also picking them to win the last and final wild card spot in the NFC. I believe that they are going to find a way to put it all together. We all know that Kyle Pitts has been disappointing throughout his career, but Bijan Robinson and Drake London are the exact opposite. They've been good, and they have ceilings that we have not reached yet. They have the ability to be better. So I'm just going with the Falcons. I'm going to think and believe, choose to believe that the quarterback's Penix, the left-hander, is actually going to be the difference between them missing the playoffs and making the playoffs this year, and I think they're going to make the playoffs this year. Now, Bryce Young and the Carolina Panthers, this puts them third in that division. And I got to be honest. I don't think it's Bryce Young's fault necessarily. He played better at the second half of last season. But I just don't think he has a lot of weapons. And I also don't believe in the line that he has. Who's running the ball for the Carolina Panthers? I think they have a lot of work to do roster-wise before they can expect to win games at a more prolific rate, which is why I'm placing them third in the division. You know, you hope you don't lose a talent like Bryce Young. You hope he continues to improve, but maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. Who knows? But I don't think they're going to be good enough to make the playoffs this season. Which leaves us with the New Orleans Saints, who bring up the rear in the NFC South. Look, the Saints have one job and one job only this season, and that is to decide if either Spencer Rattler or Tyler Shook can play quarterback at the NFL level. That is their only job. Saints are going to lose games this year. They're going to be fourth in the South. They have to decide whether or not they need to use what is likely to be a very high draft pick in the 2026 draft. Use that pick on Arch Manning or some other quarterback. They have to decide whether or not the quarterbacks they have can play. And that is their only job this season. It's not to win games. It's to determine whether or not they have their franchise quarterback already on the roster or not. So, I told you that I had some prep work done on this whole list for the NFC rankings for me. And that it all took place before the Micah Parsons trade. To me, this should be proof to you. The NFC West, I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks winning the NFC West. I think Sam Darnold, Jackson Njigba, Tyler Lockett, I think that team is actually going to play well enough to win the NFC West. Yes, over all the other teams out there. I think that defense is going to play well. I think Mike McDonald is really kind of going to have his feet underneath him as a coach this season, in his second season. I just think Sam Darnold may have found something with Minnesota that is not going to disappear or go away. In some ways, he's very similar to Geno Smith, and we'll see what Geno does with the Raiders this year. But I think that he's found something, Sam Darnold, that literally is going to allow him to play more consistently and more free. So I'm picking the Seattle Seahawks to win the West. So I will say this for the very same reasons. I'm picking the Arizona Cardinals to come in second in the NFC West. Look, I think, like him or not, Jonathan Gannon has done a very, very good job with this Arizona Cardinal team. I think Josh Sweat is going to help that defense. And he's familiar, obviously, with Jonathan Gannon, and Jonathan Gannon is familiar with him. I think Kyler Murray is going to continue to come back to where he was prior a couple of years ago. Marvin Harrison Jr., I think, is going to be better. I think the Arizona Cardinals are going to be second in the NFC West, which leads us to the Rams being third in the NFC West. I just don't know how many games Matthew Stafford is going to miss. He's undoubtedly going to miss games, in my opinion. We don't know how serious the back issue is, but whenever you hear that there is a back issue, it's a problem in the NFL, especially if you play quarterback. The Rams have a talented coach. They have a talented roster. But without Matthew Stafford, I don't even know who their backup is. That's a bad job by me. But I think that they're no better than third this season in the NFC West, which leads us to the San Francisco 49ers. Look, the Niners have so much problems with health, as far as I'm concerned. They're kind of like a West Coast version of the Green Bay Packers, as far as I'm concerned. I just don't see them being healthy enough to make a run. I don't think that they're going to make any noise this year. Do they have talent? Yes. Do I believe in Purdy? Kind of. Will they miss Deebo Samuels? Absolutely. Is that defense going to be able to stop anybody? I'm not sure. The 49ers, I really think, are fourth in that NFC West. And I am not apologetic about that at all. I could be wrong, but I don't think the Niners are going to do anything this year. Maybe next year and the year after. But 2025, I'm counting them out. All right, so my playoff teams are the Eagles, Commanders, Packers, Lions, Buccaneers, Falcons, and Seahawks. And I believe for the NFC Championship game, the Philadelphia Eagles will face the Green Bay Packers. Pick was made before the Michael Parsons trade. At Lincoln Financial Field to decide who goes to the Super Bowl. Honestly, I think the Eagles are going back to the Super Bowl this season. We'll talk about whether or not they win next week. But there are my picks for the 2025 season. And folks, that is the show for tonight. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. My name is Cyrus Farmer. And as always, we thank you for being a participant in this endeavor that we do for you. We enjoy it week in, week out. And we're going to be back next week. We're going to be back with a Wednesday night episode that'll probably get uploaded Wednesday night or Thursday morning so that we can all enjoy the game one of the 2025 NFL season. The Dallas Cowboys being hosted by the Philadelphia Eagles. My name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tea podcast. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.